Welcome to today's installment of Mantra here on CATR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Raghunath and I'll be here for the next hour. And today's show is a special show. You might have noticed last week we weren't here. There was some special broadcasts and we've been away quite a bit throughout the summer at festivals, and the result of that being away is that we have a whole bunch of really great interviews to share with you. And today is going to be the first part of that interview series. Today is going to be music and interviews with Suzanne Sterling. She's a yogi, singer, a social innovator, an activist, many different things, and you're going to discover a little bit about her throughout the course of the next hour, which is some of her thoughts that she shares on various different things, from self-expression within community, talking about festivals and festival experiences, the whole Off the Mat program, which if you don't know is about taking that experience which arises through the practice of yoga and spreading it out into the world, spreading that healing energy out into the world. Also, she talks about bringing dance into her teaching and the power of practicing together, or having a yogic or a spiritual practice together in community, setting intentions, talk of the divine feminine and ecofeminism and other things too. So there's a lot of different topics that's gonna be popping up in the next little while, and some really great stuff and some music too. We're gonna be hearing a few of her songs. First one we're going to kick off with right now is Devakyam, subtitled Divine Mystery, and from her Blue Fire Soul release a couple of years ago. And this has within it the chant Devakyam, Devarupinyam, which is coming from the Bhagavad Purana, one of the many Puranas in the Vedic literature. And it's speaking about Devaki, Devaki being the mother of Krishna. So Krishna, as the divine being, when he was present in the womb of Devaki, she also glowed with that divine light. And that's what Devakyam Devarupinyam is referring to, that she was of the same quality of that divinity with Krishna within her womb. And it's a bit of a longer description maybe I can interject with later on if there's time. But we're going to get rolling with the music right now. This is Devakyam from Blue Fire Soul, Divine Mystery with Suzanne Sterling. You're listening to Mantra on CATR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Devakyam Devarupinyam, Yeah.
That was Suzanne Sterling from Blue Fire Soul with Dave Akiam. And as I was saying, this is coming from that particular, those words, Dave Akiam Deva Rupinyam, in Sanskrit from the Bhagavad Purana. And just a description of the birth of Krishna as the divine being. So I'll read for you a little bit about the background of that. It says, sitting alone in a jail cell, Devaki awaits the birth of her last child in fear. She is in a secluded meditation. Her brother, who has taken and killed all of her other children, anxiously awaits this delivery. He has her guarded on all sides. With fear in her heart, the darkest part of night approaches. Carrying the Lord in her womb, Devaki is glowing with light, thus creating a brilliant glow around the jail cell. Suddenly the heavens open, with singing angels or Gandharvas, while saints and gods come down to worship her and relieve her fear. The heavens shower melodious singing notes around her, describing with joy the beauty of this woman. She is the same worshipable category as the Lord himself, Devakyam, Deva Rupinyam. They sing, for she holds the Lord within her. Rose petals rain down from the heavens, while the ocean and wind also take part in the decorating sounds. The earth awakens with music as the joy of Krishna's birth takes place on this holy night, Jayamane Janadane. This is the song of the glorious mother. I'm going to play a couple of public service announcements, and then we're going to get into the first part of the interview segments with Suzanne Sterling. Listen to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Discorder Magazine is proud to sponsor the Vancouver International Film Festival's showing of Tito on Ice, directed by Max Anderson and Helena Ahonen. A surreal tale in which graphic novelists cart along a macabre papier-mâché mummy of Marshal Josip Broz Tito, encased in a refrigerator, on a barnstorming tour of the former Yugoslavia. For showtimes and more information, visit vif.org.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
So the first part of the interview is going to be, Suzanne's going to be talking about self-expression and within community, and then it's just going to flow out from there. I'm not going to talk until the end of the show now. We're just going to weave in and out between songs and interview segments, I believe. I may go back on that, but we're going to try and cram as much as we can into the next 40 minutes. So without further ado, here is Suzanne Sterling from an interview that I did at Wanderlust Festival in Whistler in September of this year.
It's really been an interesting process in the yoga community to be bringing this idea of self-expression in community more and more into the yoga classes. I've been doing it for a long time, and you know, 10, 15 years ago, I was a little bit seen as like the crazy person, and now people are more and more embracing it and wanting to bring it into their practice, bring it into their healing journey, and bring it into their own classes as teachers. I, you know, about 5 years ago, I started teaching in teacher training programs in the U.S. too, and just bringing the idea of, you know, the ancient rishis and the yogis knew the power of sound. There's whole, you know, cosmologies and histories about the power of sound from many cultures. And we in the West, or I would say in the civilized, quote-unquote, part of the world, have civilized ourselves away from the medicinal quality of self-expression, particularly sound. And the thing that's interesting about this time right now is that it's very cutting-edge. Like, the medical community is now saying, oh, sound can be used for profound ill and also for profound good. And so I try and give people a little bit of a rational explanation about why and how sound works, the physics of sound and sound healing, before I make them sing and dance and do crazy stuff, because it generally gives people a little bit more permission. Mm-hmm. So the Sing Yourself Away class is like, you know, there's talking and then we walk through a yoga practice and how to use sound combined with the asanas to release trauma from the body. And then we just I call it like singing our prayers. So just getting everyone playing and singing it up on their feet and dancing with the drum. And then I try and bring out their own innate creativity. And I think that's part of what I'm, you know, what my job is, is to try and help people remember that we're all creative artists. Like, every one of us has a voice. Every one of us has an artist inside of us, and particularly a voice inside of us that's just dying to get out. Mm-hmm. So I try and normalize it.
How do you see different festivals like Bhakti Fest and Wanderlust, and then you have Burning Man and Lightning in a Bottle? So is there a crossover between these festivals?
Well, you know, I've been doing music festivals for 15 years. Burning Man, Lightning in a Bottle, Earth Dance, Harmony Festival, Bhakti Fest, all of them. And so I feel like I have a very specific view of them, because I've been doing them for so long. And 15, 18 years ago, there was no yoga, or very little. I mean, I taught a yoga class at Earth Dance years ago with no floor and just like in this, you know, no covering. And it's been fascinating to watch that emergence. And so I think there's a lot of crossover. One of the things that I've seen in the sort of like regular music festivals is that they're more and more bringing yoga and transformational practices in as a regular part, as a way for people who are party people to have focus. So, you know, another thing that I do is bring ritual into places like that. So I've been called to bring moments of connection and ritual and just simply a moment of focus for the group as a whole to a lot of festivals. And I think it's really important, because otherwise you go to a festival and it's a kind of a disparate, kind of unfocused experience. But if we add this element of transformation and healing into it, then there's a little more purpose and meaning for the party. And the same thing, likewise, I've noticed that, you know, yogis over the years doing conferences and festivals are yearning for connection in a playful way, but haven't known how to create it. Right, so how to get off the mat and create moments where we can sing and dance together and really be in community in all the spectrum of ways that we want to do that. So again, it's been fascinating. Even Wanderlust at first had a little bit more of a split between the yoga community and the music community. It was like, for me, it was like, oh my God, my worlds are converging, you know. But now it's more and more integrated, right? So you will see the yogis out at the dance parties, and you will see the people that are on the dance floor in the yoga classes. And, you know, now Burning Man has whole villages just dedicated to yoga and kirtan. And so to me, it's a dream come true, because, you know, for all my life, there was so much separation between, there was my yoga person that was, you know, taking one track and getting up early and doing all that. And then there was the musician in me that had, you know, sometimes didn't even start playing till 2 a.m. And there was a lot of separation. And then there was the ritualist. And now all of those pieces have somehow blended in a really interesting way for me, that's much more integrated in my own life. And now I'm much more unapologetic about bringing it into places like this, where for some people it's the first time they've ever experienced it. But I know how powerfully profound it is for people. Like, we want to express ourselves in community. That's what we want as human beings. And, you know, to me it's tragic that we don't let ourselves create those. So, you know, it's not always been an easy path, but now it's a lot easier for me to do my work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Susanna is somebody that's worked with many different people, collaborated. I'm going to play a track by Medicine Drum entitled Funk Chakra, which features also Wisdom, a.k.a. Tevye Jones, and Suzanne. And then after this, we're going to get back into the interview.
the elemental, pure essential foundation. G-O-D, situation, L-O-V-E, meditation, G-O-O-D, vibration. Inject my dialect from my introspect to your CD deck. Original, infinite, the amount the soul can grow. Mind infinite, if you choose to let go, let go, let go. Then you'll really see the way we go.
Thank you.
So, Suzanne Sterling singing with Teffy Jones, aka Wisdom, and Medicine Drums track Front Chakra. In the chant near the end, you could hear Kali Durge Namo Namaha offering respects, asking for protection and blessings from Mother Kali, from the goddess. I'm going to get back into more of an interview with Suzanne Sterling and talking a little bit about Off the Mat and dance. You're listening to Mantra on CATR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You know, one of the things that myself and Sean Corin and Hala Corey did about 6 years ago is we founded an organization called Off the Mat, Into the World. And it was really us specifically looking at the yoga community and thinking, you know, it's a growing community. There's a lot of people doing it. There's a lot of people doing yoga that are, you know, once they start going on that yoga practice and the healing that happens there, what happens is we sort of step away from the trance of consumption and we go inside. And most people, when they do that healing process, find that they have a lot to give, right? And then we're sitting on these resources in America of, you know, so many. Not only do we have the spiritual resources of the yoga practice, but we have very practical resources, like the median, you know, income for people doing yoga in the United States is $50,000, right? So we thought, what if we brought together people in the yoga community to actually build community and do something with those resources, like literally change the world? Because we've had the privilege of being able to do this work when most people in the world are not, they're just trying to find their next meal. So how dare we just keep it to ourselves? So we started that movement, and it's been really, it's grown exponentially, and I'm really excited about it because I feel like, you know, there's been activists who've done amazing work in the world for many, many years on the front lines. I know a lot of them and have worked with people that have been doing really intense, beautiful activist work. But to do it in the spiritual context, to do it in a context of not separation but connection with others, to do it in a way that's hopefully healing and that rather than, you know, forcing change kind of magnetizes change, I think is an opportunity for us as a community, as a spiritual community. And I'm seeing it work. Like, you know, when we first started Off the Mat, people didn't want to cross, you know, they didn't want to cross yogic lines, they didn't want to cross studio lines, and now we're seeing more and more yoga businesses working together. Particularly in one of our initiatives is called the Save a Challenge, and we ask people to raise money, and then whoever reaches the goal of $20,000 comes with us on a trip to see where their money is spent to work on the projects that they're actually funding. It's a profound journey, not only the fundraising part, but the actual trip. You know, one of the things we've seen is that in the beginning, people had a hard time going to their communities and raising money. But now what's happening is they're going and they're pulling together, like Dallas, for instance, put together this model where all the yoga studios in Dallas come together and raise money. Mm. So they're not competing against each other. They're actually cooperating. And that's something that we stand for really profoundly, is the idea of can we take the practices of yoga that we learn on the mat and really start to shift our relationships and shift our businesses and shift our how we play and shift everything that we do in the world.
I think we talked a little bit briefly about how you have an interest in dance and integrating that into what you're doing. So do you have any thoughts on
you know
that?
It's coming in more and more, and it's only because it's, you know, yoga people are really in their bodies, they're really comfortable with their bodies. Oftentimes it's they get uncomfortable, like not being told how to move, right? Or not doing the prescribed asanas. So I find it's kind of like a bridge to singing, because singing is the most scary thing for people, right? People are just terrified of using their voices and being heard for numerous reasons. And you know, in my effort to get people singing and normalize it and get them, you know, a little bit out of the fear body about it, I, you know, the gateway is the movement. And again, it's a way to build community. It gets people in their playful self, gets them in their creative self. And it's like it's a natural extension of the yoga practice. And then once you get people moving, and in their bodies and in the rhythm of their bodies, then you can kind of extend that into sound and singing in a real natural way. You know, I spent many years as a dancer. That was my... first, I did theater for many years. Then I was a dancer. And then I moved into music. So if I have a lot of background in all those modalities. And again, didn't really know how all of the weird things that I knew how to do were going to blend together. And this world really is perfect for that. Like, it's, you know, I learned so much from the contact improv dancers that I have worked with over the years, and people who've done, you know, ecstatic dance, and that, and sort of like the free form aspect of it is something that the yoga community is embracing. Just like they're embracing music. And, you know, on a scientific level, what happens is we go into what's called rhythmic entrainment. And rhythmic entrainment is just, or vibrational entrainment. And what happens is that we're naturally synced up to resonate with each other. And by resonate, I mean vibrate together, right? So if we as human beings are these walking antennas, just we're like a bundle of vibrations, right? Right down to the cellular level. But there's other vibrations going on. There's brain waves going on, right? And what happens when we start to practice together, we breathe together, we sweat together, our heart rates actually begin to sync up, and then our brain waves begin to actually sync up. And they can even now measure, there's a very small part of our brain that tells us we're separate from each other. Mm-hmm. And when we go into rhythmic entrainment or sympathetic resonance with each other, what happens is that part of the brain goes to sleep. Like you can, it measurably goes to sleep. So now, again, modern science is starting to realize, wow, you know, this is really powerful if we can get people to get into these states of vibrational resonance with each other. Things shift. Something greater than the sum of its parts happens. Great healing can happen. And so I think people more and more are starting to be able to measure what the effect of sound and singing is, and in particular that harmonic resonance that happens as human beings come together and do this together. So, you know, healing happens when we sing and when we move and when we release stuck energy in the body, and we're in that sort of natural expressive flow that human beings are kind of hardwired for. But then more healing happens when we do that in community. Something bigger happens, and we have an experience of oneness. I think that's why kirtan was such a profound revolution in India in the 15th century, because you know, at that time they just said, we don't need the Brahmins and the priests to get to God. We experience God in our being through devotion and through song. Mm-hmm. And you know, now again, science is now remembering, because the ancient rishis knew this and Greeks and Romans knew this. We're remembering now that we can actually, we're discovering now that we can actually prescribe certain states of consciousness with sound. Like certain rhythms and certain frequencies affect the brain so deeply that we can go into states of deep meditation instantaneously through sound. Mm-hmm. We can balance the hemispheres of the brain through sound, mm-hmm. through particular frequencies. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of sound healing, which was a big part of the yoga practice, which was a big part of Greek and Roman times, like you would go to the healing temple of Asclepius, right, and you would get healed, and part of the healing was sound.
Then beyond that, there's the intention.
There is
and
intention.
You mentioned that yesterday.
Yeah, it's huge.
So how does that fine-tune the experience?
I think what the yoga practice does is it rings out the places where we're not alive, right? So we release the places that are stuck, the trauma from the body, the places where we're not alive. And so we become more bioavailable to our truth, to the truth of the moment, to really responding to what's in front of us, what's real and what's now, as opposed to living in the past or living in the future. So I think when that happens, we wake up in this really interesting way. We have a very different experience of our lives. So when we become bioavailable, what happens is the mind actually calms down, right? So we have more access to calmer states of mind, literally, which is one of the yoga principles, right? The stilling of the fluctuations of the mind. So I think that when we create that, it's like fertile soil for whatever seeds we want to plant, right? So if you plant a seed in chaotic soil or dry soil or rocky soil, it doesn't take as well as if you've got this rich openness, right? So I think what we're doing in the yoga practice is we're creating this environment, and then we can plant seeds, and those seeds we're planting in the unconscious or the subconscious, and those seeds are our intention, right? And our intention has so much to do with our experience. It's not everything, but it's a huge piece. Mm-hmm. Right? The subconscious works in so many ways, profound and challenging and beautiful, but you know, one of the things that we know is that what we focus on becomes real for us, right? So whatever we put our attention on, the subconscious grabs onto it and starts to attract more and more of that. Mm-hmm. So setting intentions, I see it almost like dropping a pebble into a still pond. Like the more still the pond, then you drop that pebble of intention in, and it ripples out and it begins to work on its own. Mm-hmm. The subconscious, in its wonderful, mysterious way, begins to draw in what we've decided we need and want and deserve. And I have a hard time talking about these things sometimes, because I feel like affirmations and intentions, like a lot of that's been sort of co-opted by the New Age in a way that's not really, it doesn't have a depth to it, right? So I have a hard time saying some of these things. I'm like, I don't mean this in the New Age way. I mean really what we put our attention on becomes what happens to us, right? And So the way I see intentions is when we set intentions, we're putting out a prayer into the universe, especially when we speak it out loud, because sound is a physical thing and words have so much power. We're really asking for it, you know, that it's so true. Like, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. Mm-hmm. Be careful with the words that you speak, because they have their magic formulas. They have profound effect on the world. So I feel strongly that intention works, and I feel strongly that when we speak and sing our prayers, they work. Like, there is something actually physically leaving my body, going out into the world and affecting the world. Mm-hmm. It works one-on-one, and I know that when we get large groups of people together to sing and release their prayers, like we did this morning in Sing Yourself Awake, we sang prayers for others in the world that are suffering, and I think that's profound. Mm-hmm. You know? The Tibetans did it for centuries. They just prayed for the world, pray for the world, pray for the world, and there's something healing in the praying. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
None at all. No, I'm kidding. Wow. I have lots of thoughts on that. I do, you know, my take on that is that, first I'll say that I'm trained in an ecofeminist spiritual tradition. Like, that's my background, ritual from an ecofeminist perspective, which is to say that I think that spirit or source or the divine is immanent in all things. It's not when we die, we're going to go to heaven. I don't have that belief system. I believe that here and now is an opportunity for divine consciousness in all beings. So I have reverence for the sanctity of all beings and all life. And I think that's a fairly feminine principle, right? I in my belief system, the male principle is a principle of, you know, nature and the natural world is ours to control. Mm-hmm. Right? And I actually feel like now we're all shifting into, we're stewards of this beautiful thing called the earth, and we better take care of it or we're going to lose it. And I truly subscribe to the theory that there is a feminine aspect to the divine, as well as a masculine aspect to the divine, and a non-gender specific aspect to the divine. But I tend to have more of a relationship with the divine feminine, because I came from a feminist progressive background, right? So I believe that the empowerment of women is a crucial piece to, in our evolution as a species. I believe we came from matriarchal societies, matrilineal societies, societies that were in much deeper connection with the cycles of the earth and therefore the divine feminine. And I believe that we have gone through many years of patriarchal control that's been interesting but damaging, mostly to women. And I think that there is a movement happening right now. It's surely happening in politics, right? You know, in Uganda, there's more women in public office than men. We're seeing it in politics. We're seeing it in the workplace for sure. It's still not totally equal, but in some places it's growing. There's a lot of research being done about how, if you know, in foreign aid, if you give the money to the women, they will stretch it a lot farther, because they're taking care of the community, right? So they're taking care of the children and themselves. So a lot of the work that we've done off the mat is microloans for women and trying to empower women to be in charge of the money. It's just proven to work better. So just on a purely practical level, I believe in it. On a on a spiritual level, I believe that right now is the time for, honoring of the divine feminine and all aspects of what that means, including the earth itself and nature and reverence for nature and not destroying what, you know, the natural resources that we have. I think women need to step into positions of power. I think women are right now finding their voice. That's why the work that I do, I feel so passionate about it, because, you know, my take on it is that men right now are wanting to are evolving towards feeling and heart. Right? They're finding their heart, their love for the world. And women have to step into positions of power and be bold and find their voice. And it's scary. Because, you know, for centuries, you know, there's people right now on the planet, men and women and children, who, you know, if they spoke their truth, they would be tortured or killed. Or being tortured and killed right in this minute when we're having this conversation. And I certainly know that I have deep-seated fear about my voice, about telling the truth when I'm in conflicted situations. I get that that's an easy thing to say and not an easy thing to do. But I do think it's our time to start saying, you know, here's what I stand for. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to speak truth to power. And I also think that makes it tricky for us to be in relationship with each other, men and women, right? I think all those old roles are breaking down and we're like, how do we do this thing, you know? And we're all trying to figure it out.
And the healing process, this is part of.
A huge part. And I don't know where we're going to go with it. Like, I have no clue. But, you know, I definitely feel like there's more and more and more women stepping into this way of being where they're not as afraid and not as controlled and not as oppressed. But still, I mean, I say that with a grain of salt, because a lot of the work that we do in the world is seeing how women and children still are very, very oppressed. And you know, last year we went to India and we worked with victims of sex trafficking. And in my research around that, I realized that, you know, human trafficking, not just sex trafficking, but human trafficking, that includes men, is one of the fastest growing problems on the planet. It's the third biggest moneymaker on the planet after arms and drugs. And it's growing fast. So it's going to be a big issue for us. And women and children are a part of that. So I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm working it on a spiritual level, like just trying to give people an understanding and an experience of their own voice and a permission to tell their truth and an unapologetic way to go out in the world and make change. But I also feel like I want to keep working with the larger issues, the political issues, the social issues, the economic issues that are creating, that are continuing to perpetuate oppression of the feminine. And I don't just mean women, but of the feminine. And I will further say that, you know, as a quote unquote woman of power, it's a big learning for me. Like, I'm used to the more alpha, more out there, you know, loud and proud kind of deal. And what I learn, what I keep learning about the divine feminine is there's an aspect of it that's very surrendered, very vulnerable, very soft, knows how to receive. And that is my work. Like, I have no clue. Like, you know, that's like confusing to me. And all the women I hang out with are alpha females too, right? We're go-getters. We're sort of masculine in that way. We're not trying to be men, but there's a masculine and there's a piercing energy to it. And what I'm trying to learn in my own life is, yeah, I can do that sometimes, but I want to learn that other thing, you know, being in more balance with my feminine side and my feminine side. Someone else's feminine side might need to bring out their Durga, you know, the fierce mama, right? I need to bring out the Empress, who's like laying back. And someone's putting grapes in my mouth, you know? I don't know how to do that. And I get it, right? Like, I see that that's my work. And so I think it's different for all of us. I think it's what I'm trying to
say. So that brings us to the end of the interview segment. There's one last part that I was going to play, but we've run out of time. However, in that part, she was just talking a little bit about how some of the projects that she's working on now. You can go to SuzanneSterling.com. That's SuzanneSterling, SuzanneSterling.com, if you want to find out more about some of the things that she's involved in, some of the projects that she's involved in. I'm going to play a public service announcement right now, and then we're going to cap things off with one last song from her. You're listening to Mantra on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Oh, okay.
quit you, baby.
CITR is proud to sponsor the Vancouver International Film Festival showing of Bill Morrison's film The Great Flood. Weaving together compelling archival footage of the Great Mississippi Flood of 1927, complemented by an original score by Bill Frisell. That flood led to an exodus of sharecroppers all heading north. The result? Chicago blues, rhythm and blues, and ultimately rock and roll. For showtimes and information, visit vif.org.
Thanks for tuning in today. The last track is going to be a preview track from the upcoming release. I believe it's not out yet. Maybe it did come out. But when I received this, it was a preview track for an album titled Songs from the Deep. And entitled Rise in Me, the CK remix by Suzanne Sterling. And so we heard quite a bit of stuff in there. Some of the tracks, I'm not quite sure if I announced this one. We heard Bismillah with Masood Ali Khan and Suzanne Sterling, and also featuring Garay and Duke from the Hung with Angels release. Also, we heard the Medicine Drum track featuring Suzanne Sterling, and we heard Deva Kyum with Divine Mystery from her Blue Fire Soul release at the beginning of the show. Go to mantraradio.co for to connect with me or to listen to previous shows and find out about this show. We'll be back next Thursday, 4 to 5, for more interview coverage from Wonderlust 2013 featuring Kia Miller and MC Yogi and other interviews also. I hope you enjoyed some of what has happened in the past hour. Here's Rising Me. We'll see you next week. Take care of yourself till then. Namaste.
Swallow my silver tongue.